Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. Thank you for being here. Distinguished guests. Everybody is distinguished. Distinguished guests. Members of the press. Colleagues. I think we have a few perm reps as well. And we're being followed by webcast internationally. And that means that we also have a few of our colleagues, journalists, that are following by webcast. And they will be also participating. Welcome to the global launch of the annual Agricultural Outlook, produced jointly by FAO and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, known as OECD. And I had to take a double take. Indeed, it is 2019 to 2028. So we're having an outlook for the next 10 years. And I have the pleasure here to have on the dais with me. I'm Yasmina from the Office of Corporate Communication. I have on the dais here a distinguished panel with Maximo Torero, who is the Assistant Director General of Economic and Social Development Department for FAO, Mr. Ken Ash, who is the Trade and Agriculture Directorate from OECD. We have Holger Mathy, who is the economist for FAO in Trade and Markets Division. And I have next to me also Mr. Hubertus Guy, who is a senior policy analyst with OECD. So welcome to all of you. As I said, we have some questions that will probably be coming from journalists who are tuning in. So they'll be on Twitter. So please do not consider me rude if I'm looking at my two phones, because that's where the questions are coming from. So I just want to make sure you all know. And before, without further ado, there are two guests who usually are here, the Director General of FAO and the Secretary General of OECD. They could not be here with us today, so we have the pleasure of having two video messages. We'll start with the first one from the Director General of FAO and then from the Secretary General of OECD before we move into the presentation and the comments and dialogue from the panel. So, first video, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I address you on the release of the new OECD-FAO Agriculture Outlook Report. Over the past 15 years, the outlook has developed into a globally recognized reference for future market trends and emerging issues. It is also a great example for a successful partnership between international organizations and national institutions. I would like to congratulate our teams on a job very well done. This new report presents projections for the major agricultural commodities over the next decade, 2019-2028. Those projections indicate that we will see a further rise in global food consumption, but slower economic growth coupled with conflict and extreme climatic events are taking a growing toll on food security and on agriculture production. In addition to the problem of undernourishment, the world is facing a growing burden of overweight and obesity. The outlook rightly points at urbanization as a leading cause of the fast change in lifestyles and consumption patterns. But there is also a growing recognition that better policies can help address these problems. We need to encourage consumers to shift to healthier diets. At the same time, we need to provide incentives to the agriculture sector so it can produce more healthy food. Further to the normal projections, the new Outlook report features a special chapter on Latin America and the Caribbean. Agriculture has been an important economic sector in the region and a major source of exports revenues for countries. Our outlook foresees that this will continue in the future, and the region will actually reinforce its role as an agriculture exporter. Much of the growth can be realized through higher productivity and not by using more land resources. This sustainable growth can set a positive example for the world. Many countries in the region can serve as a success story, and some have engaged in partnership to share their knowledge and experience. This is exactly what we want. We want all countries, all stakeholders, to join forces in the fight against hunger and malnutrition. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. So that was the message from the FAO Director General, and we'll just give a few seconds for the next. We have a slight sound issue, which will come up. I'd just like to let everybody know that we do have interpretation in English, French, Italian, and Spanish for this session. You'll find the audio in your tablet in front of your chair. And just for the journalists who are tuning in and sending in their questions from Twitter, please know that you can do so using the hashtag AGOutlook. Again, hashtag AGOutlook.
After several years of relatively calm market conditions, today world agricultural markets face a number of risks, including policy uncertainty from trade tensions. Overall, our agricultural outlook this year suggests that productivity will continue to outpace demand growth, which implies declining real food prices. Now, this is good news for poor consumers, but it will put pressure on farm incomes. The outlook for 2019 also makes clear that trade will be increasingly important for global food security. Regions experiencing rapid population growth are not necessarily those where food production can be increased sustainably. Open, transparent, predictable trade is important, particularly in Latin America, the focus of this year's special chapter. Farm policy should focus on addressing the core challenges facing the sector. Feeding a growing world population, while also providing livelihoods for farmers and reducing the sector's environmental impact. Governments must invest more in people, in research, in innovation, in sustainability, and in infrastructure. Together with the FAO, we are committed to helping countries address these challenges.
Very well. That was the message from the Secretary General of OECD. So, without further ado, I think that the best thing would be if we move into giving the floor to Holger Mathy, who will, of course, then give us actually what the meat of the report is before we hand it over to the other members of the dais. So he has a presentation for us and will give us an overview of the outputs, the messaging, and a number of other things. So yours, the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Jasmina, for the introduction. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming, for your interest in the outlook. I have the honor to present it on behalf of the two teams at OECD and then FAO and all our collaborators around the world. And I'll start with a brief overview over the key messages and then go into some more detail on them. As we've already heard, the real prices of agriculture commodities are projected to decline further, which means they stay on their long-term trend. On the consumption side, we see that the strongest demand is coming from Africa and Asia, because after all, that's where the most of the population growth, about 90%, is going to originate. In terms of commodities, dairy products, sugar, and fats are supposed to have the highest increases on per capita terms. But also the evolution of eating patterns towards more livestock food food from livestock origin, animal origin, will draw more crops into feed. While on the other hand, biofuel, what used to be a driver in the past, is seen as fairly saturated. So overall, we project that agriculture outlook of the commodities that we cover, which are the main commodities, main food commodities, not including fruits and vegetables, will go up about 15% over the next decade. And most of it can be done through increasing productivity, which allows land to stay largely unchanged. We already also heard that trade will be more important. It will slow down in total volume growth, but it's increasingly important for food security as well as for livelihoods in exporting regions. Now, prices. Here I illustrated the price trends using the FAO Food Price Index, which combines the international reference prices of important food commodities. And you see in the bluish colors the nominal and in the reddish the real, and that dark red on the right is the projection that I just talked about. So we assume that we come to the conclusion that through our evaluation of supply and demand fundamentals, that essentially marginal production cost could and will decrease further slightly, so which allows us to bring in the additional resources at lower prices. So we don't see any bottlenecks or severe constraints over the next decade. So on the consumption side, so that evaluation of the fundamentals is based on our assessment of a number of driving factors. First of all, population. That's fairly straightforward because that's based on the population survey, which indicates about 1% growth totally over the next decade per year, of course, with regional differences. Then, especially for higher value products, we still have per capita growth, and that's based on the complex of drivers that I list here, and these are the ones we evaluate. And so we have income, and we assume about 2.5% globally over the next decade there. Then change of lifestyle through urbanization, what we already heard. And then especially in advanced economies with high income and stable structures, policies and preferences, they also play a role. And we look at all of these factors to define where we see the market going. And then feed is of increasing importance, as already mentioned, because livestock demand is going up. And our assessment here is that we see a further intensification on the livestock side, which means more feed will come in per output. While on the other hand, the driver on the biofuel side is really policies to reduce local pollution, support farmers, and mainly in Brazil, China, Indonesia, we still see some growth, but it's far below what it used to be in previous years. A similar approach on the production side, where we also evaluate different drivers to come, you know, to the total pictures. And here I disaggregated it into the two major ones, the intensive one, productivity, and the more extensive one, area or herd size. So on top, you have the evaluation for crops, and you can see green is the productivity. So it's the share of the growth that can be attributed is mostly green. So as we said, most of it for most commodities, it's productivity. Only on the far left, the oil seeds, where we have strong demand, we will bring in some additional area, especially in Latin America and in Eastern Europe. While on the other hand, for rice, it's even going to go down a little bit. The picture on livestock is a bit more mixed, so we do need significant herd increases there to get to the increase that we are projecting and that will be demanded. And only for pig meat, a little bit for beef and veal, and somewhat for milk, it's mixed, while for poultry and sheep meat, it basically all has to be accomplished through expansion of herds. Now, we evaluate these different trends for each commodity, each market, each country that we have in our model, and then we put them together, and then this trade picture emerges here. And you see here the net trades for various regions and important countries. And I'd like to direct your attention sort of from the top, where we have Latin America and the Caribbean remaining the major exporting region. Just below, it's North America, which is leveling off a little bit compared to sort of previous decades. But the next one below, Europe, which includes Ukraine and Russia, based on strong growth in cereal exports, will be a region that captures increasing market shares. And then we go below, in yellow, you have Africa, where it's also increasing imports, while on the other hand, China, which came down a lot, meaning increasing its import very rapidly, but now we see it leveling off based on the leveling off or the slower growth in soybeans, mainly. And if the African swine fever epidemic increases even more, things may level off or even turn around in the future. There are some uncertainties, and we also point to them in the outlook. Now, as we have already heard, we have the chapter two, our focus chapters this year, dealing with Latin America and its prospects and challenges. And that chapter has, you know, an incredible wealth of information, details on policy structure and so on. So I cannot go over all of this here today. So I decided to just focus on one prospect and one challenge to give you a bit of a flavor of what we're going for here. So I decided to really highlight the persistent competitiveness on the global level, so that we think it can increase its market share, it can maintain a higher production growth rate than the competitors. But we also talk about policies that are needed to promote these strengths further, and so we think that support policies for strategic investments into sustainable growth and also the promotion of equitable growth will be key to further development. But the region also faces challenges, and I picked one challenge that's been discussed a lot, which is the one of the so-called triple burden of malnutrition. While we still have undernourishment despite great progress over the last decades, we now also face overweight and obesity. And on the right hand, also highlight the call for, you know, continuation of policies that help to relieve poverty and decrease hunger. But at the same time, we need a search for effective, successful policies to curb the obesity problem, and then, you know, to scale them up into successful initiatives. That's all for me. All the detail we will find on our website there, www.agrioutlook.org. You have all the text. You have the online-only chapters that are not in the book, which provide all the details on the commodity groups. You have the database, a downloadable database, or a PDF statistical annex with growth rates and a lot of detail. And if that's not enough and you would like anything further, please feel free to contact us at our addresses that were there just a minute ago. And you'll see them also on the back of the flyers that we have available for you outside. Thank you very much for your attention, and we're looking forward to the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Holger. Just for those who have tuned in, just a reminder that we're listening to the launch of the Agricultural Outlook 2019-2028, a collaborative work between OECD and FAO. Without further ado, I'd like to hand over to Mr. Massimo Torero, who will speak to us a bit more about the report and its importance to the multiple stakeholders, as well as a few other things, I am sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all to be here, dear members, members of the press, distinguished guests, dear colleagues, and especially thank you to Ken Ash, a colleague that I know from several years, and for OECD team that came here today to launch this report, which is again an example of the complex multilateral undertaking of this challenge and trying to come up with something that could be useful for all of us. Let me first start by saying that the OECD FAO Agricultural Outlook is not a forecast, it is a baseline scenario for the next 10 years, sketching out expected key developments in agricultural market in a consistent manner. Now, one of the important things that we are trying to bring in this baseline scenario for 10 years is to identify several risks that could be affecting us, which is important to be able to understand what could be changing in the future. And in this case, the potential risk that we are looking at is spread of plants and animal diseases, growing impacts of extreme climatic events, and possible supply disruptions arising from growing trade tensions, and especially the changes in dietary patterns, which are a result of urbanization and population growth. And that's extremely important, as it was mentioned before, because these multiple forms of malnutrition will put a lot of pressure on our potential policy actions, and something that both OECD and FAO need to find ways to increase our resilience to these potential risks that we will be facing. Now, as it was mentioned both in the videos and in the presentation, what this report brings is what we call the balancing act in certain way. So we have an increasing demand, increasing urbanization, increasing in patterns of consumption. We need to resolve that increasing demand with something in the side of the production side, which basically could be increasing productivity or increase on expansion of area. Clearly, as you saw in the case of agriculture, crops, we are expecting a significant increase in productivity. And that's something challenging given that today we have a lot of problems in terms of access to good quality land, access to fertilizers and to inputs in the market, and also because of a scarcity of water and quality land. So there are constraints. Latin America, as we will see later, is an exception in the sense that has significant amount of access to water and good soils. But again, we will be able to achieve that increase in productivity, which is what we are expecting. And today we are seeing a slowdown in the increase in productivity, but despite that, clearly seems that we will be able to cover that increase in demand, and that is why we see real prices going down. But the balancing act assures also that this increase in productivity in the case of crops, but in the case of animals, it's through the increase in herds, will require for us to be sustainable. If not, we don't have that balancing act. And sustainability is not for free. So that will imply certain investments, certain costs, and we need to be able to be ready to be able to cover that. Now, why is so important bringing up the case of Latin America? The case of Latin America is important because Latin America is a region which today is abundant in land and water. It accounts for 14% of global production and 23% of the global exports of agriculture and fisheries commodities. Production growth is expected to slow down over the coming decade, but with 22% of growth for crops and 60% for livestock products. And this will mean that basically will continue to be the breadbasket of the world. In addition to that, Latin America is an example of how we can be evolving in terms of opening markets, given that we have so many free trade agreements that have allowed commodities to flow. And that's something to learn from. But again, the big constraint is sustainability. So how we assure the sustainability that we need to put in place to be able to do that, and how we assure that trade policies continue to be in the way they are today to allow us for the flow of goods that we need to be able to access to the commodities that we need. And again, another issue which is important is the issue of behavioral change in terms of consumption patterns. And it is linked to urbanization, as I mentioned before, and is linked to these problems that we are facing today of increase of overweight and obesity and all the old forms of malnutrition, including continued increase of undernourishment and hunger. So we need to find ways in which we can compile all these elements. And I think this baseline of the outlook helps us to understand a little bit better what is going on and will help us to be able to put in place policies that will allow us to make better decisions, to build up new scenarios so that we can resolve challenging questions in the future and in the next years. So with that, thank you very much for your presence, and we will be happy to answer questions later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Torero. I now hand the floor over to Mr. Ken Ash, Director of the Trade and Agricultural Directorate for OECD.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Just a couple of words. I want to come back to the trade story and talk a little bit, not just about the importance of better functioning both input and output markets to allow goods, services, products to move from where they're in surplus to where they're in deficit, but to talk about some of the other constraints, the realities of agricultural markets. They have been relatively protected or isolated, high levels of support for a very long time. And frankly, we're seeing a slowdown in policy reform that would allow agricultural markets to operate a little more effectively. At the same time, there are, as all of you know, or everybody that has access to a television, there are trade tensions in the world that didn't exist not that long ago. They have significant impacts, direct impacts, on particular sectors of our economies, both manufacturing and agriculture. In the aggregate, these impacts are relatively modest. Of course, if your sector is impacted, it's not modest at all. But even more importantly than the direct impact of some of the recent restrictions on trade that we've seen are something that I think economists call, at least these economists call, the uncertainty impact. And that is, given the tensions, given the uncertainty about what happens tomorrow and next year, there's a hesitancy in the business community. Confidence is eroding, and we're seeing a slowdown in investment. And by many estimates, this uncertainty impact of the current trade environment is much more significant, much higher than the direct impact of trade measures that we've seen to date. So that's one point I wanted to underscore. The second is on a much more positive note. We have seen since a decade ago a supply response that has not been widely anticipated. We are seeing an outlook over the coming period that's for production agriculture is positive. It has the attribute that it's very convincingly demonstrating the supply capacity of production agriculture of farm households around the world. And that's in the absence of the kind of positive policy incentives that Maximo talked about very briefly. With increased investments in people, in skills, in education, with more focus on available technology, we can drive productivity and drive sustainability much more than has been done to date. But it requires investment. It requires a confidence and a commitment from governments. And we'll see more of that when we see a little bit more international cooperation that goes beyond the some of the shorter-term transactional actions that we've seen recently. So all to say, I think it's important to keep the trade agenda in mind. It's also important to keep the people agenda in mind and focus on the kinds of investments that would allow farm households to do what they do well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ash. I think we'll open up the floor to people here in the room first. If there are any questions from the floor, any technical aspects, both Holger and Hubertus will take care of them. If there's a roving mic, I think, if anybody has any questions from the floor. Otherwise, I have something coming in on from journalists. Oh, you see right here. Yeah. If you can identify yourself, although I do know that that is thin from Reuters, but for everybody else on the panel.
Hi, I'm Thin from the Thomson Reuters Foundation. I focus specifically on food security issues. I actually like to touch on the greenhouse gas emissions projections in the report. Agriculture is such a major contributor of these emissions, and I see that in the report you are projecting an increase, but a lower increase over the coming decade than compared to the past 10 years. I'd like you to elaborate a little bit more on what are the implications of this in terms of whether agriculture is becoming more environmentally friendly, number number one. And number two, I also see that a lot of the projections is expected to still come from livestock, especially cattle, and concentrated in Asia and Africa. Does that also mean that with the debate, you know, on meat consumption and what it means for the climate and the environment, are we saying that it's actually going to be less environmentally destructive for developing countries for meat consumption over the next 10 years compared to the last 10? Thank you.
Thank you, Thin. Anybody in particular would like to take it? Perhaps Maximo, and then... if there are any more details.
Sure, just to start, clearly the report is projecting emissions of 0.5% per annum, no? Which implies a reduction which is consistent with the idea of the Balancing Act that we're trying to achieve. Although, as you saw, there is a significant increase in the site of the herd production levels in the simulation. So I that will be, and Holger will explain that in detail. But I think the important part is that this reduction won't be enough to achieve the level of reduction that we need. So there is a lot of improvement that still needs to be done. But let me pass with Holger with the details.
We have a certain demand, and in order to satisfy that demand and to improve the nutritional situation, we need an increase in livestock production, and that also implies an increase in herds. So in absolute terms, yes, we will see under the current condition, right? So that is an important point. What we do here is, if you want, an accounting exercise that follows the climate IPCC methodology, where we look at how much more production do we have, and we have emission factors. So that does not account for any mitigation or adaptation initiatives that we also list in the book. So on one hand, you might say what we show here in the outlook is not a desirable situation. It's alert people to the problem. If you continue doing like this, this is what's going to happen, but that's not necessarily or not at all a desirable outcome, nor a likely one, because we want people to change. We want to have these measures that we see are possible to be implemented, as we heard. So, but what we do here is really to show, if under current technology, current emission factors, herds increase like this, and the productivity that we currently see, and that is based on trends as we see them right now, technology trends as they are right now, we see a decreasing carbon intensity. So per unit of output, it goes down a little bit. So that's a good thing, and that's based on, you know, getting more meat per animal. So if a cow is not as long in the pasture, it doesn't emit as many greenhouse gases, right? And that's what we're saying here. So it does not make any assessment inference about good, bad. It's a pure positive reporting that we're doing here. And of course, then for government, according to their objectives, it is to decide where they want to have their policy focus, because there are trade-offs involved, of course. You know, you have better nutrition, but with better nutrition comes necessarily, at current technology, higher emissions. So, and that's not for us to decide, nor do we make any recommendations here. So,
thank you, Holger. I know that Mr. Ash would like to add to that, and then Mr. Torero.
Just very briefly, and it's not in the outlook, so I'll tell you a story. I was on a dairy farm last week. The operator told me that he is not really in the dairy business, he's in the pasture business, so it's an extensive operation. And his performance is, and his objective is to increase output with fewer cows and by default a smaller footprint. So absent policy incentives, the reality that if there isn't progress made on farm, there will be directions from somewhere to mitigate emissions. There are, I think, significant parts of the farm community that are already taking actions, and I think this is something to keep in mind. The policy mistake that we often make is to underestimate the capacity of people to manage their businesses. And I thought I was impressed. I thought I would share that little story. You won't find it in the Outlook, though.
Only to add one point, because, again, the Outlook is a baseline. And one of the things that are really important is that 40% of these increasing emissions will come from Africa and 45% from Asia. So we are talking of developing countries where production and productivity capacity still face a lot of constraints. So that's something to really take into account because clearly we can improve and there could be policies to have a better husbandry policies to make a greener livestock, like many countries are doing. For example, in Latin America, there are some good examples in Uruguay of what they are doing to try to reduce emissions with cattle. But again, the important thing is where this is coming from and the constraints that they are going to face. And that's what the Outlook is trying to let us know.
Thank you very much. We have a question. Oh, okay. I'll start. If you don't mind, I'll start with Belin in the back for one of the journalists, and then we'll move to Perm Rep in the front. Thank you.
Hello. Good morning. My name is Belin Delgado from FN News Agency. I would like to ask you how can trade tensions impact exports from Latin America in the following decade? And also you mentioned the openness for trade, but with the current trade agreements, you are seeing some concerns from producers on how they can be prepared in a higher competitiveness. So I would like to know your opinion, please.
I'll leave it to Maximo to talk more specifically, if he wishes, around Latin America. At a global level, I mean, the reality is that some of the restrictions that we've seen introduced in the past couple of years have been specific to both manufacturing and agricultural sectors, so that obviously has a dampening effect. The thing that's more worrisome from a policy point of view is the uncertainty impact that this is apparently having. So when you have an environment in which access to markets, both on the input and the output side, are not particularly clear, then you tend to keep your money in your mattress. The investment flows, the confidence that's needed to drive growth is not present. So this is the single biggest fear that we see on the wider economic horizon, and agriculture is caught up in this. If you look historically at sectors that tend to be targeted during moments of trade tension, bilateral or otherwise, agriculture features high on the list. So the risks are there, the uncertainty is there, and the dampening effects on growth we think are pretty evident.
Yeah, only to add, I fully agree it's an issue of uncertainty, and what we have been seeing in terms of the trade tensions between the U.S. and China already have created some effects in terms of prices, because what is not being exported from one country will be exported from another country. And Latin America are big players. The case of Brazil for the production of soybeans, the case of Argentina and Uruguay and so on and so forth, they are bigger producers and exporters of staples. Well, the beauty of trade is that it allows to move areas of surpluses to areas where you have deficits. No, that's what we want. If we start putting restrictions and we create uncertainties, the only thing that you will create is more volatility in the market. And we observe some episodes of volatility in the last months because of the trade tensions. So that's what we want to minimize. And why it's so important to minimize volatility on prices is because farmers have to make decisions. If they are observing very volatile prices, then it will be very difficult for them to make optimal decisions on what to produce and how to produce in the future. So that's what we want to minimize through this type of avoiding this type of problems.
Thank you very much. Front, permanent.
My name is Zoltán Kálmán. I'm the Hungarian permanent representative to FAO. And I would like to start by saying that this was an excellent opportunity to have this presentation jointly. We always look forward to see the reports of the OECD FAO agricultural outlooks. It gives a good picture on production prices, trade, consumption, and so on. But my I haven't heard in the presentation reference to the aspects of food losses and food waste. And my question is whether it is there. I would really be happy to see that in, later in the report. And if it is there, how the what kind of trends were considered in the decrease, hopefully decrease, according to the SDG objectives? What kind of increase was considered in making the forecasts for the production, for the consumption and the prices and so on? What kind of impact they had on the forecast that was made? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Maximo, I think you'd like to take that one.
Okay, so you open a very interesting topic and also an opportunity for advertising of the next sofa, which is looking at the Los Angeles, so it's a good advertisement. So I think, this is a baseline. So we are observing basically the net effect. And in the information that they are capturing already, they are incorporating the net effect of food loss and waste. Okay, so we used to have a number in mind, which everybody refers, which is this one-third, and that's what we are working to try to improve and to get an updated estimation of what is the level of losses and waste. Now, the second part of your question is what are the potential effects of that and what will be the consequences of that? And the results are mixed, okay? And the report doesn't capture that because it's a baseline of the current situation, what we have today. But one of the – so there are two elements. One is what will happen if I reduce – assume – the 30% to 10%, okay? Then you will have an increase in supply, supposedly, or more reduction in prices, and you will affect the farmers even more. But it's not as simple as that, the story, because you have a feedback effect. So we will have to see what will be the net effect of that potential reduction. Now, the other part is how you reduce it, and that's the complexity, no? We are looking at different policies and different elements because the losses part is different to the waste part. For developing countries, the losses part is more relevant today. For developed countries, the waste part is more relevant today. And then what we are finding in the losses part is that it varies according through the value chain. So it's not only at the post-harvest, which was the typical way in which you look at it, but it's also at the pre-harvest level, and it's also even at left in the field. And that's where in developing countries we need to focus and find solutions to that. And in the case of the waste part, there are different policies that we need to learn. The idea is to move in parallel. But again, the report is not looking at that. Specifically, it's looking at the net effect today, given the level of losses that we have and which we absorb through the balance sheets of availability of food that we have today.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the room who would like to ask? Oh, sorry. Also representation.
Hello, good morning. I'm Terry Sarch. I'm a United Kingdom permanent representative to FAO. Thank you very much for the presentation, and I'm looking forward to reading the report in more detail. I think one thing that struck me was something that you didn't talk about in your presentation, and that's conflict. We hear a lot, and we're looking forward to the next SOFI report, but in the previous ones we've seen that the levels of food insecurity are increasing, and a lot of that increase has been attributed to conflict. In this report, we're seeing that food prices are likely to remain steady, potentially decrease a little, and productivity is going up. That seems like a good story, but it will be good to hear your comments and views on what impact conflict has had on your outlook. Thanks very much.
Okay, so two things. Of course, again, the report captures the net effect of the situations that we're observing. Now, the countries which are in conflict represent a small proportion of the overall world, which is what this baseline tries to bring up, which doesn't mean it's not extremely important. Of course, it's important, and as you know and have seen in the previous SOFIs, a state of food insecurity, it explains a significant part of the increases in hunger that we are observing. And we will see that also in the future versions of SOFI. But the important thing here, again, is to put things in context. No? So we're looking at overall baseline and what is the share of this in terms of food. Now, the other element which I think is important when we refer a conflict is what will be the mechanisms to increase resilience for those countries. No, and that's something that we look at in other types of publications, but not specifically in this. But it's a risk that we need to take into account. It's a risk that we take into account in the estimations. But again, in the overall context, in terms of supply of food and demand of food, is not big, relatively speaking.
Pardon me, we have a question here, and then I have two coming in from our followers.
Thank you very much, Clara Axblad at the Permanent Representation of Sweden. I have a similar question as my colleague from the UK, but in relation to climate change. There was a question on the contribution, let's say, of agriculture to climate change through emissions, but my question is, on the contrary, whether the report looks closer at the impacts of climate change on production trends and consumption. Also, I didn't read the report in detail yet, but if you have any comments to share on that, it would be interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much on that. Just to add that I have a note that says that you can now find both the English and French report online, so as soon as they've been uploaded during this launch. So.
I will start on this one. I think what we always do, and that is always, we look at current situation, and so there's an impact of climate change, also the situation how agriculture adapt, and so we already see a path in it, and we don't have it explicit written, but one issue is one impact, and that's overall the productivity growth is a bit impacted, but we cannot directly allocate that one to the direct effect. But with consultation with experts, we see that it's more difficult to achieve a percentage of productivity growth. And that's actually, to an extent, attributed to climate change adaptation of farming. It's not quantifiable, but it is in there, and that's why productivity growth is a bit curbed compared to what would be technical under stable conditions and not adjustment to a changing situation possible. And that's how it's incorporated, but it's only indirectly, and you cannot quantify it or show it directly in the thing. That's somehow a comment in that direction.
Thank you. I think, Holger, you want to add something?
Yeah, I just want to...
is two aspects. One is the mean, and the other one is the volatility, right? And what I showed you here is the mean, are the fundamental prices. And Hubertus just explained to you what we do there, and that the effects on the mean are very small and hard to separate. And also the important thing is, what assumption do you make about the ability of agriculture to adapt, right? Because we're not assuming fixed technology, we're making progress. And so, and as he said, we're assuming that progress maybe a little bit. But the other thing, what I wanted to add, is that we're also asked the severe events, right? Because the other aspect of climate change is severe events, droughts, floods, anything that may destroy the crop in a particular region. And the assumptions, of course, of the outlook are that the weather is just perfect, right? No severe events in there. But we do additional scenarios to look at these things, and we're increasingly asked to do these things because regions are concerned about these things. And so both the OECD and us, we both have developed certain scenario setups to look at these things. They're not in the outlook, but I'd encourage you and ask you to follow us, our other publications, where we do make reference to these things and show what can happen, and also, you know, what buffer stocks. We did one for the Arab regions where they wanted to know how many buffer stocks do we need if we have a disaster, right? So these types of things we do increasingly, and this, what we do here, is a tool to underpin the discussion on these things.
Thank you very much. I'll ask the two questions that come from our followers. One very early riser in Latin America who says, and is following, because it says, it was said that Latin America was chosen because it is a potential breadbasket. Are current climate change and trade policies taken into consideration within this outlook? And then a follower from Europe who says, will we make progress towards meeting the 2030 zero hunger goal despite the variables in place? I'm not sure who wants to take which one. It looks like Mr. Torero is going for the first one.
No, so I mentioned that because clearly Latin America has significantly grown in terms of exports of commodities. So it's a great example to bring it into the discussion, and it's also a great example because of the level of free trade agreements that we have in those countries, which allow the role of trade. Now, whatever is on the trends that we are working to estimate this baseline, then it's incorporated. But specific policies at this point are not incorporated, although, of course, in the net effect, we have whatever is being affected by in terms of climate change and so on. But clearly, Latin America is one of the regions that have the more access to water, the more access to good quality soils and so on and so forth. So it's the region where most of the potential growth in productivity and inclusively in area could happen across the world.
Thank you, Mr. Ash. Yeah.
Just on the second question, and maybe somebody wants to add. So, the outlook itself foresees progress, but not nearly sufficient progress in terms of reducing hunger and undernourishment. But I think here we need to be a little bit humble. The issue around hunger and undernourishment is not a function of supply of agriculture; it's a function of poverty and incomes. So I think it's a much more complex issue around poverty reduction as opposed to increasing the supply of food. Now, in many countries, they're not unrelated. The reality is that significant parts of many of our countries will develop further and faster with food and agriculture and other resource contributions. But I just wanted to be a little cautious about looking for the outlook to give you the full answer on the hunger goals.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ash. We have about three. Oh, good. So we have a few more minutes, and I'll turn it back to the House now. We'll do ladies first. So first question on the stage left.
Thank you, Gunvor Berge, Deputy Perm Rep from Norway. I may be mistaken, but in previous reports, I have read that one was expecting that a lot more land needed to be cultivated in order to provide enough food for the growing population of the world. And now you, if I understand you correctly, you say that there will be a lot more productivity growth than actually expansion of agricultural land. And that is, of course, good news in many ways if you look at loss of biodiversity, loss of forest cover, etc. So it relates back to the questions of the consequence of feeding a growing population. But could you say a little bit more about because I'm pretty sure to have read in FAO reports that they were expecting quite a lot more land to be cultivated in order to provide enough food. So could you say a little bit more about if anything has changed, what kinds of assumptions that you build into the increase of productivity rather than through rather than through using more land.
So let me begin, and then we'll let the FAO talk about the FAO. I mean, it's my understanding that for quite some time, the increased output that we've seen globally does not come primarily from increased land at all. It comes from increased productivity on the available land. And when you look ahead, medium and longer term, I don't think anybody's expecting that situation to change. So the land base, keeping the area that we have is not a bad objective. I think the bigger issue looking ahead has to do with water availability and use. But just to correct your underlying assumption that I don't think in the recent past we've seen, nor are we projecting, massive increases in land use at all.
Yeah, and I fully agree. We have not never said that there will be more land needs to be brought into production. So what we are saying today is that we will need a growth of 1.5% per year, which is lower than the 1.9% per year that was happening in the past, to be able to keep pace with the increase in demand. So that's exactly what is being said. So let me send you in terms of any technical.
No, I fully support what was said. I just want sort of technical clarification a little bit, because we've improved our land modeling from strictly looking at harvested area to actual land use. So where we before were not really going into the cropping intensity and separating actual land use from harvested area, so we focused on the harvested area, and we do need more harvested area. So, and what I showed today was sort of for the first time where we really looked at just at land use, which is a because of an increase, projected increase in the cropping intensity is a lot lower than we did maybe last year. But there are two different units here, so which we hope is an improvement that we can now focus actual on the land use rather than the harvested area. So that may be a little bit in terms of the technicality. So we always said, implicitly had that this is a harvested area while land use should be minimally increasing, but we make it more explicit, and I in my presentation made it a lot more explicit, and maybe that seemed like it's not consistent with the past. On the other hand, I also think we are a little bit slower on the overall growth this year than we have in the past. So and the beauty of the outlook, having it every year, is that we can adjust our views, and we adjusted a little bit so that the growth that we needed was toned down a little bit, especially on the meat side. We used to see like about 50 million tons more meat needed. We're more like closer to 40 now, which needs a little less feed, and a lot of the increases in area was in soybeans. So there are we, you know, we made adjustments, learning, getting new information, and so that's maybe where it seemed an inconsistency, but it's I think it makes sense.
One more fine thing.
Yes.
Yep. Where there is an increase in the case of livestock, we are predicting an increase in number of herds. No, that's when he presented two graphs. In the case of crops, is more productivity. In the case of livestock, is the number of herds.
Thank you. We have two hands that were raised, and then I think that'll bring us to a close. We'll take the two questions simultaneously. The gentleman in the white shirt next to Malika, and then Chris from CFS on the third row as well. So, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you very much for the very good presentation. My name is Roberto Teleria. I work here as consultant, as agricultural policy. I understand that, well, as far as I remember, there has been another work together between OECD and FAO, which was the Agricultural Outlook 2013-2022, if I am not mistaken. And I wonder if there has been, at that time, when that report was produced, if there has been any review of the projections. If that project, the review has shown that the results were consistent, or if there has been a need to make some kind of adjustments to the methodology, and how these things have helped to produce these projections, because results are extremely important for decisions and recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We'll also take Chris's question at the same time, and then this way the panel can respond to one after the other.
Chris Hagedorn, Secretary of the Committee on World Food Security. And Ken, welcome back to Rome, and congratulations to both OECD and FAO for this outlook. November of this year is going to mark exactly the 45th anniversary of the World Food Conference, at which point trade issues were a much different picture. Obviously, you pointed out the trade disruptions, which have an impact on productivity outlooks. But that 45 years ago, that conference produced EFAD. It was born from that, the Global Early Warning System, the consultative group, as well as the Committee on World Food Security. So my question, given the vast difference in trade outlook and trade's impact on world food security, what message would you have, and particularly from an OECD perspective, to the committee members themselves, whether it's at plenary in October or broadly speaking, because trade is not on our agenda. We are looking at voluntary guidelines on food systems and nutrition next year, but trade is only one small component. So my message is what would you say to the committee members, and what could the committee's role be in addressing the points you've made in your report? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll let Mr. Ash take the first jab at.
So when you were asking your question about projections, Maximo told me he wasn't here then. So I don't know what he meant, if he was just like absolving himself of any responsibility or signaling that things are about to get better. I don't know. You can figure it out. So the only thing I know about our projections is that they're not correct. They will not be right. They are not a forecast. They are a baseline, as Maximo has pointed out. We assume normal weather, current macroeconomic conditions, current policies, all of which we know are not good assumptions, but those are the ones we make, because the baseline tells us what will happen if nothing different happens. So if you do a baseline and you don't like the outcome, then what are the policy levers that you can adjust to get the outcome that you do want? That's the purpose. So we have looked. We're never right. If we are, it's not because we intend it to be. It's a total accident, okay? So the baseline is a baseline. It is a look ahead under a set of explicit assumptions. That is an input to doing the kind of scenario work that helps signal for governments the policy levers they could pull or push to get themselves to a happier place, okay? Chris, thank you for your question. I guess there's two parts to it. If all we do is continue to focus on the current headlines and address trade tensions as if they were something that were introduced very recently, I think this would be a bit of a mistake. I mean, the reason I mentioned earlier, the recent restrictions that we've seen have not been helpful for fluid markets. But in agriculture in particular, there's a very significant stock of restrictions to trade that have been in place for a very long time. So the trade agenda is not something that was invented in the last 6 or 12 or 24 months. The trade agenda in agriculture, for sure, has been with us for much longer than most of us would like to admit. So point one is we need to take a fulsome look, not just at recent flows, but of longstanding stocks of restrictions on trade in agriculture. Second part of the response, I think governments, at least every government that I've ever spoken to, has a very clear agenda for food and agriculture. That's about feeding people, allowing people to make livelihoods, and sustaining the resource base for the long term. And that comes from an agenda that is around improving productivity, improving sustainability, and in particular, given climate change, improving the resilience of farm households, their ability not just to react to shocks, but to mitigate and take proactive actions. I don't know how you drive productivity, sustainability, and resilience if you don't have input and output markets functioning. So not just opportunities to sell, but opportunities to buy. I mean, if you can't get the best inputs into your business, then I don't know how you drive productivity and competitiveness and profitability. If you don't get the best technologies into your business, I don't know how you ensure more sustainable resource use than we've seen in the past. So I think it's important to not focus on trade as such, but to focus on outcomes of which trade can be one facilitator or one driver. So for what it's worth, that's my advice.
Thank you, Massimo.
Yes, only two comments. I fully agree on the issue of the previous with the current baseline, because our baselines are looking at trends. So of course, we need to assess every time we do it. Regarding Chris' question, the first thing is that if you're looking at food system, you need to have trade there. So it's not just to have little or big. You need to have trade in food systems. It's part of the system, so it cannot be out. The second thing is that if we have available food, that doesn't mean that we have that everybody will be accessing to food. And clearly, the regions which are the poorest ones are the ones which will be growing less in terms of income growth. And therefore, that is the reason why we observe the numbers we observe in hunger and undernourishment. And the last comment is that having enough supply of food, which is basically what this baseline is telling us, that we will have enough food. And today, we have enough food. That's why we can cope with issues like what happened in the U.S., in terms of the reduction of production of maize. They are planting a lot less than they normally plant historically. Despite that, prices are okay. But it's the issue of the quality of the food. I think what the second chapter of this outlook is also bringing is this issue of available food, but not necessarily of the quality at the price levels that you can to be able to improve the consumption quality, which is ending in these problems of overweight and obesity. So it's not only availability, it's also quality of the food, and of course at the end is how you distribute that food, and that is related to how much income you have to be able to purchase what you need.
Thank you very much. I think this brings our session of this launch of the Agricultural Outlook 2019-2028 collaboration between OECD and FAO to a close. This is what you can find online, so it is in English and in French. Thank you all very much. Thank you to the panelists, Mr. Ash, Mr. Torero, Mr. Matthew, and Mr. Guy. Thank you very much. And for those who tuned in, thank you all. And you can always look at this webcast over on the FAO website if there are parts that you missed. Thank you all very much. Have a good day.